Hier kommt die Reality-Elite.
Ich suche nicht die Sendezeit sucht mich.
Beste Umgangsformen.
Du kannst dich im Pool pinkeln.
Ich meine, wie crazy ist das?
Und Unterhaltung vom Feinsten.
Wir sind hier im Premium-Trash-TV.
Eine neue Folge, Kampf der Reality-Stars. Heute, 20.15 Uhr bei RTL 2.
Darauf kannst du jetten. Der Big Orange Sale von EasyJet ist da. Mit bis zu 15% auf Flüge und 200 Euro Rabatt auf Pauschalreisen. Strahlende Aussichten für deinen Sommer. Jetzt bis zum 30. April buchen auf easyjet.com.
Get out there.
And I really love the game itself. And, you know, when you are sitting at the board and I'm focused, I am in my bubble and I don't know anything what's happening around. But I would not have continued if it wasn't for the social life around. And almost all my friends are chess players, or I met them during a tournament or at the club or some connection with chess. So it just has been a very, very big part of my life.
Okay. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode number 6 of our FIDE podcast of the Year of Women in Chess. In this podcast series, we will introduce you to some amazing and inspiring women in the world of chess, including players, authors, coaches, journalists, and chess streamers. Today, we don't just have one, but actually two amazing and exciting guests for you. Our guests are an unbeatable mother-daughter duo. One of them is one of the world's strongest chess players, who over the last decades more than once was the highest-rated female player in the world. And when she won her Grandmaster title in 1992, she was only the fifth woman ever to do so. Her daughter, though also an incredible chess player and woman FIDE master herself, gave her very own twist to chess in her life, as she's one of the most successful chess streamers and YouTubers in the world with over 200,000 followers. I'm super pleased and honored to have Grandmaster Pia Kramling and her daughter, woman FIDE master Anna, as our guests today. Welcome you two.
Thank you. Hey.
Thank you. Hi.
Okay, let's kick off with what kind of has become a bit of a tradition over the last episodes of the podcast. As our guests are coming from all over the world, we first want to hear a little bit about the country you come from or currently live in, and get a bit of an idea also about maybe what the chess culture there is like.
Yeah, do you want to start, Mom?
maybe I shall start. Yes, so we are living in Sweden. And Sweden has actually a lot of chess traditions. It used to be one of the strongest countries, but you have to go back like to the 30s, to the 40s. We even had the Chess Olympiad, I think it was in the mid 30s. We had a team which was one of the best. And if you take the first intersonals for qualification for the World Championship in the open class, actually Sweden held 3 of the first 4. So that was quite amazing. And so, we have had a lot of chess traditions, but what have happened with time that they have been, let's say, there have been so many other things competing with chess. So it has gone the way I'm not so happy with. So chess in Sweden compared with other countries in Europe, we have one of the problems is that chess is not a sport. It's not culture. It stands alone. And it means that there are generally less economical help for the chess. We have, but by tradition, we have had a lot of juniors players. We had a boom with juniors from the middle of the 60s. And there we got Ulf Andersson, who became number 4 in the world. He has been a top player for a very, very long time. And we got some other very strong players, but we got also very, very many juniors playing. And then I think that during a long time was the strength for Sweden. We didn't have training for the elite juniors, but we had a lot of juniors players. But now we can see other countries is catching up and they're passing us. And so when it comes to chess, it's a little bit a problem because it's not a sport. It is not so much coverage in the newspapers. And now with the pandemic, we have had a problem. Lots of countries might have that lots of players who played in the clubs, they just disappeared and they didn't come back. But we also had got players who like to play at home, who never know anything about the club, never went to a tournament where you play over the board, we have an increasing number of players like that. And some few of them might come to the clubs and play over the board tournaments too.
Yeah, I think that from maybe a little bit of a more young perspective, as I was in high school just 1 year ago, and I could see how people in my age reacted to chess and how much chess they played and et cetera. And what I realized was, just like you said, that during the pandemic, as in many countries, I believe, chess became a lot more popular for people that had never played chess before. When I was walking around the corridors of my high school, I would see people watching streamers on YouTube during the breaks, streamers like Gotham Chess or Hikaru. I'd see people play on chess.com, play games. I'd hear people talk about chess. Sometimes I'd hear someone shout, "Oh no, my queen!" In the corridor. And I thought that was amazing, because that's something that I'd never expected to see during my life. So that was really amazing. So I think that in that sense, it's grown a lot. And still, I know that when I go and meet people of my age and I explain what I do, they immediately feel like, "Wow, you play chess? Wait, that's so cool. I've started to play chess. I played chess after a Queen's Gambit." So I think that everyone or many people at least resonate with chess in some way. So yeah, I think that if I would have gone, you know, a question on how does chess look like in Sweden 3 years ago, I would have said that it was very small. It was extremely niched, and it still is when it comes to competitive chess, and it still is when it comes to, I guess, playing over the board and going to clubs, which in that way is sad. But it's definitely, when it comes to just playing online, it's definitely, there's a big boom of that, and there's a lot of people that do that nowadays.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I think it's like a trend we see all over the world. And with Corona and the Queen's Gambit, I mean, just shifting the whole perception. But maybe we can pick that up a little bit later, because with two people, I thought, okay, we focus a little bit on the chess side and Pia first, just because she's been around for longer. And then like the second part of the episode, we can go a bit more in detail in the streaming and what potential that has. And maybe then you can also tell us a little bit like what streaming life is like. But yeah, let's start a little bit. First, focusing on, as I said, like Pia, just because you're kind of somewhat of a chess legend. So you started playing chess in the 70s, and since the early 80s have been one of the strongest female players in the world. Mm-hmm. And after so many years of playing chess, what is it that still fascinates you so much about the game, or I don't know, the chess player lifestyle?
I guess it's that I really have a love for the playing, and I really love the game itself. And, you know, when we are sitting at the board and I'm focused, I am in my bubble and I don't know anything what's happening around. And I really like this, this concentration when the only matter is what happened on the board. So for me, the chess itself, it's just so fascinating and I love it so much. But I would not have continued if it wasn't for the social life around. And almost all my friends are chess players, where I met them during a tournament or at the club or some connection with chess. So it just has been a very, very big part of my life since many, many years.
Yeah, and I think you pretty much played everything that was out there, from championship, OTP tournaments, Olympiads, individual competitions, team competitions. Is there anything you particularly like? Like, are you more like a team player, or do you think that just creates like extra pressure, or do you just like every tournament the way it is just because they're so different from each other?
No, I really like the team competition. I really love the Olympiads when you play the national teams. And it's very special to me now when I can, you know, I can play with Anna. We play together in the team. That's really, you know, the best thing that can happen. And we also have the luxury that Juan, Anna's father, he's the team captain. So we are there, the whole family. And this is really, I think, the greatest moments for me. But there are, of course, also other tournaments I love. But really, when we play in the team, we have a good atmosphere, and playing with Anna, with Juan and the other girls in the team, this is really, I think, the best for me.
And actually, like the Olympiad is pretty close again, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's going to start at the end of July. It's going to be in India this year. And so, Anna, I saw already on your social media that you'll be representing Team Sweden. So you made it in the team. Well, you have played an Olympiad before, I believe. But what are your expectations and how many Olympiads have you been to before? I guess like both as a player, but also like accompanying your parents.
Oh, yeah, I visited a lot of Olympiads in the past, I believe. I think my mom can answer this question better than I can, actually, because a lot of the Olympiads I visited, I was really young, so I can't really remember them. So actually, mom, how many Olympiads have I been to?
Yeah, now the first one was in Calvia 2004 when when you were two. But then I didn't play all the Olympiads for different reasons. And the next one was in Dresden 2008. And then it was and then it was Tromsø 2014, and then finally you entered the team.
Yeah, okay. So it was three times that I visited without playing, and then the fourth time I played, and now I guess this year in India it's going to be the fifth time.
Yeah.
That I visit, but the second time that I played the first time when I was 14 in Azerbaijan. I am really excited. I think it's going to be really fun. I love team competitions. I participated in the European team championship just a few months ago. And I've always really enjoyed team competitions because it feels like there's something more than just your game. You can, you know, contribute to your team. So I really enjoy that, which is also a reason why I decided to play the Olympiad. For me, it's a little bit more fulfilling when it's that way. I am just really excited. I haven't played that much over the board these past 2 years since I started streaming. But I'm definitely going to be preparing, and I'm excited to bring a whole new repertoire to the Olympiad, hopefully, and surprise people with that, because I want to try to play new things. So I am just very excited. It's going to be a really cool opportunity to participate.
Dear chess friends, here is Michael, the editor of this podcast series. Thanks very much for switching on. I'm very happy to be part of this collaboration for the benefit of the Year of Women in Chess. My German chess podcast Schachgeflüster is now sponsored by Aim Chess. Therefore, I would like to draw your attention to this great tool. Aim Chess is part of the Play Magnus Group. On Aim Chess, you can enter your lead chess, your chess.com, and your chess24 usernames. Aim Chess analyzes your online games for you. For example, they evaluate which openings you are successful with and how good your time management is. There are also valuable learning tools. You can, for example, practice positions where you blundered in the game. You can complete lessons in the training room, and you even get a personalized training plan. Just try out the whole thing for free, and if you want the full range of functions, then feel free to use the code SCHACH30. Schach30 to get a 30% discount for the first month of your premium account.
And Anna, do you feel like, because you just said you like these team competition because there's like a bigger goal, but like also do you sometimes feel there's like increased pressure, or like, for example, do you feel pressured like playing in the same team as your mom, or does it just you mean like you get extra preparation and training?
No, I don't really think I feel any pressure, in the sense of that. I think that I've always been the one who puts the most pressure on myself when it comes to competitive chess. So I've never really felt that much pressure externally, I would say. So I think it's mostly just myself. I enjoy playing with my mom. I actually find it quite relaxing being in the same team as my mom. My mom has never put pressure on me, and she's always been really supportive when it comes to my games. She almost doesn't watch my games because she gets so nervous.
Yeah, that's actually true.
I don't really feel that in any way that way. I guess that if just pressure-wise, I guess that now that I haven't played a tournament in a while, I am nervous that I'm just going to go there and it's not going to go well. So I guess I feel mostly pressure in that way. But no, not by my parents.
And do you guys, so I assume you'll have some team training session to prepare for the Olympiad with the rest of the Swedish team, but do you also, as a family, what can I imagine like life to be like in such a chess family? Do you also have your own little training schedule at home, or are you all kind of doing your own thing?
No, we don't really have a schedule, but we are doing our own things and we are doing it together also. So we are both separately and doing it together. But of course, now with Anna, it's different because, yeah, you're living by yourself. So,
yeah,
so,
exactly.
So we are having two different homes now. So in that sense, it's different. Absolutely.
We used to have a schedule though in the past, or I used to train quite a lot with my dad. Mm-hmm. So he used to coach me quite a lot. And still when I go to tournaments, I mean, both of my parents really help me, especially my dad really helps me with preparation, et cetera, and analyzes my games, et cetera. So I would say that, like my mom said, we do a lot of things separately, but mm-hmm. everything kind of coordinates. We meet up with everything that we've learned, and we try to learn from each other, or me trying to learn from my parents, better said. But yeah, we definitely help each other a lot. And my parents are always there if I have any chess question or anything.
That's really cool. It's such a symbiotic relationship because they help you with your chess, but then they're also on your stream. So it just seems to be working like super well.
Yeah, I think so.
No, but it's also because I knew that when Anna was small, you know, Anna has been traveling with us since she was 3 months. So there has been a lot of chess for her the whole life. And I really wanted Anna to be in the chess world, or to like chess in the way she wants. Of course, my dream was when she was very young, I wanted her to be world champion. You know,
it's wait, like, was that your dream? I didn't know about this.
It's like, because I only knew one way to you know, I only had one relation with chess, and that was competing. But of course, now I realize you can do chess in lots of different ways. And with time, I understand that. And I'm just so happy that Anna found her happiness with chess. She's enjoying it. She's doing it very, very much. And so I'm very, very happy that she's coming now to the team. She has her stream. But that chess is a big part of her life, too, because it's a very big part of my life also. And then we have something together. Yes.
Yeah. That's really cool. I think there's like, so many new opportunities that open up in chess over the last years, whether it's with like streaming or like also like the media work very much changed their podcast now. So loads of people that find like a different way to somehow integrate chess in their life. One new format actually is still tournament related, but it's also kind of innovative. I'd like to speak about is the Battle of the Sexes that took place in Gibraltar earlier this year.
Yes.
It's a very interesting concept. So basically, I think there was a male and a female team that were put together. So they had players with approximately the same rating and the same average age. Mm. And you were captaining the team, Pia. So what do you think of that format?
Yeah, I guess it was because I was the veteran player in the team. No, I was very honored. I was very pleased to be asked if I wanted to be the captain for the ladies team. And I think this match was just fantastic to organize, because it was, like you said, that it was not only a female team, a male team, but the players was also picked out. So at the level should be about the same. The average age should also be about the same. And so there shouldn't be so much difference between the players, between the teams. But actually, there were, because you are picking the players, but the rating changed every month. And in the end, the male team was actually higher rated. And I think the final result was more or less what should have been according to ratings. So Mr. Ehler was perhaps right there. But it was just very, very nice to play this match. We had a very, of course, very lovely atmosphere. And I just, this is a way of encouraging women, to helping women when you organize chess events where women are a big group, or they are, here we were half of the players. So I think these kind of events are so important. And I played matches before. In the past, we played the ladies against the veterans, but then the teams, if you were looking at the rating, we look at the age also, there were big difference. And here we had two teams who were more similar to each other. So it was a very fighting match. I think we had a little bit bad luck. We had a player who got ill, but it was very exciting, very fighting. And in the end, we didn't win the match, but we got a lot of experience and we hope for revenge.
I thought it was a great concept. I was rooting, of course, in front of my computer for the women's team, and I had a really strong start. And in the end, as I said, a bit of luck. And they're always really tight matches, but it was super interesting to watch. So yeah, hopefully we'll see more of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I guess like one of the other tournaments that is like kind of a big chess, every chess player's dream of attending once at least is the Reykjavik Open. And Anna, you participated this year and played a very nice tournament actually and finished as a third best woman. Was this your first over the board tournament again since Corona?
This was my second over the board tournament. I think my first one was the European Team Championship in Slovenia in October or November 2021. But this is my first open tournament in a very long time. Since the pandemic. So in a way, it felt almost like my first tournament because open tournaments and team tournaments are a little bit different. It was an amazing tournament. And I couldn't believe that it went as well as it did because, yeah, I hadn't played in such a long time. But I really enjoyed it, and it's such a beautiful location for a tournament. It's the most beautiful playing hall almost that I've ever seen. So yeah, it was really beautiful, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's clearly on my bucket list. As I said, it seems as one of the most well-recommended open tournaments. But yeah, let's see. One of the topics I wanted to pick up actually is that because, I mean, like, undoubtedly, it's like an exceptional tournament, but we also had issues with one of the female participants actually this year speaking up after the tournament about harassment during the event. And we all know that speaking up about such topics takes a ton of courage. And whereas there was a lot of support online from people like being like super supportive of people speaking up, there was also some people doubting the experiences or even victim blaming. And Anna, you took a standing on Twitter then, if I remember correctly, saying that you were there and backing the story. And just talking also about the battle of the sexes and that it's nice to sometimes have tournaments with like a bigger mass of females. What do you think, like, with harassment happening every now and then, what should happen at tournaments but also online for this to be tackled somehow?
I think it's important that when these things happen that they get dealt with and that people know the consequences of these sort of things. I think that the hard part is that when you are in a tournament and something happens, for the victim, it can feel unsafe for them to speak up about it whilst the other person is still there, which was what happened in Reykjavik, which was why everything was told later, which I think is really common. But I think that it's really important to continue to speak up about this. And I think it's really important that people know that this happens and know that this is wrong and that organizers know that there's a chance that this happens. Because I think there's a lot on the organizers too, being able to spot these sort of things and making sure that the environment becomes better so that these things don't happen. I think mostly it's important to speak up about it. When this happened, I was really upset when I saw a lot of people saying that, oh, this is a made up story. This did not happen. This is, like you said, a lot of people were sort of criticizing this. And to me, that was just, you know, it was just insane because it takes so much courage to speak up about something like that. And I was there and I saw everything, of course. So for me, it felt really important to really say that, you know, this happened. Stop saying that it didn't happen. It's really sad that these things happen in tournaments, especially for women. If it's their first tournament and they go there and this is what happens, it's going to leave a lot of women not wanting to participate in any other tournament in the future. So I think it's extremely important to make chess tournaments a much better and safer place for everyone. And I think that everyone can help out with that. I think when something happens, it's important to speak up about it. I think it's important, like I said, for organizers to know that these things can happen and try to make a little bit extra sure that this is not happening and trying to keep out an eye on that. But also just among chess players to talk about this with their friends and say, hey, this is not something you do. Just want to make sure you know that sort of thing. Like just amongst players, just talking about this and just, I don't know. I think it's just important to talk about it, because I think that when something is not talked about, people forget about it, and then it's hard to make a progress on that field. And this has been a problem for many years, but I don't really think it's been as talked about as lately, at least not on social media, of course. So yeah, I am happy that people are thinking more about it and talking more about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, like, as you said, like, this is something that has always happened, and this is not something that's chess specific, but something that we're now speaking up really kind of started a conversation and really made people aware. And I think the Reykjavik tournament organizers took the allegations very seriously and took steps. And I'd also like to say that the FIDE is actually taking up the topic together with Chess24, and they're organizing a global exchange forum to discuss online, like, what sexual harassment is, how it is defined, but also to discuss, like, guidelines and, like, to discuss support to report cases. So yeah, I just wanted to mention this because I think it's a super important topic, and we'll pop the link to this discussion in the description, as well as some links from the Olympic Committee, because I know in some countries, like, chess is not a sport, but nevertheless, like, a lot of sport experience the same thing. So they have some great resources on how to identify harassment and abuse in sport, and how to fight it, get help, and also prevent it in the first place.
Yeah, that is amazing. That is really important. And it's really good to have that online too, to have a forum where everyone can talk about it and share, you know, whatever they want to share in the topic. So that is really good.
Yeah, and then let's hope that these discussions in the end make chess like a more inclusive place, because it is very like limited to like males at the moment, and it would be nice to have it a bit more diverse.
No, absolutely. I really agree. And I think that also something that, I think that something that's really important is that it needs to feel safe to speak up about it, like in the tournament. Like it should feel safe to, like, there should be someone that you can talk to about these sort of things. And I don't know if this is something that, you know, could be possible, but to have someone that, you know, works specifically with that at tournaments, that you can talk with, you know, that could also be something that could be good in the future sometimes. Or at least just knowing that, you know, if this happens, you know who to talk to. I think that could become a little bit more clear maybe in tournaments sometimes. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's. I think it's very good we discussed this also here in the podcast, even though it's not an easy topic. So thank you for your words on that. Yeah, with that, I'd still like to change topic a little bit completely, actually, and talk a little bit more about streaming and you, Anna, because you somehow managed to make, as Pia said before, integrate chess in your life in a very interesting way that is not the professional, like, competing career. And you started streaming, I think, just over 2 years ago and built a huge community. And I was wondering, how did you get into streaming at first and started building your community?
It was completely random that I got into streaming, actually. I had just commentated a tournament in Sweden, the Rilton Cup, which is, I guess, the biggest chess tournament, international chess tournament, or chess open. Chess open that we have. So I had commentated that, and that was the first tournament that I ever commentated. I had never done this before, so I was actually quite hesitant to doing that, because I remember when I got asked, I was like, I don't know how to do this. I've never done this before. But I decided to take that as a challenge for myself to commentate a chess tournament. And after that, I got some opportunities with chess.com to do commentary for them. And I didn't really know what streaming was back then. I really had no idea. I just thought about commentating chess. That was everything I knew. And I knew that you could do it on this platform, but I was really, really new to streaming. But then after I did commentary for chess.com, I commentated, actually together with my mother, the Women's World Chess Championship match. A lot of people started saying that I should start streaming. And I remember really thinking, I can't stream. What am I going to talk about for 5 hours? This is impossible. I'm just going to sit there and be quiet for 5 hours. I don't know what to say. And I also didn't really have the equipment for that. I didn't have a good laptop. I didn't have a good microphone. I didn't have any good webcam. I didn't have any of these things. But my boyfriend then, he actually had these. So he said, well, Anna, you could borrow my things and you could, you know, stream from my place if you want to try to stream with my things. And I was like, all right, sure, I'll try that. And so I started streaming then, and I actually really liked it because I've always felt that when I play chess, I love chess, but you don't really get that social part of you when you're playing chess because you're quiet and you're concentrating. But I really love talking, and so it kind of became the best of both worlds, where I could be myself and I could talk and I could do all sorts of interactive things at the same time as I was playing a game that I loved. So I realized that I really enjoyed streaming. So after a couple of months, it took off. I think also the first PogChamps happened then, and chess had already started to become more popular because this was the very start of the pandemic. I started like 2 months or 1 month before the pandemic hit, at least in Europe. But when I was starting, the pandemic had started to hit. So chess had started to become more popular. And I remember the first PogChamps happened and things started to take off a bit. And then I was able to finally buy my own equipment. But for those first 2 or 3 months, I was actually borrowing his equipment because I didn't have any equipment, and I also didn't have the money myself to be able to buy it. But I'm really grateful about what has happened and the fact that I can today stream and have it as my full-time job, because I really do love it. And like I said, it combines two of my best worlds into one. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. So you said you're streaming full-time at the moment. So you graduated recently, I think. Was that from high school then?
Yeah, I graduated from high school 1 year ago.
Okay.
So in Sweden, we graduate when we're 19 typically. So it's a little bit later than in other countries. I am 20 years old now. I graduated 1 year ago.
Okay. And I also saw, you're like one of the first chess players that got signed by an esports team. So you're part of Panda. Now, for our listeners that are not super familiar with esports or these teams, what exactly does it entail to be part of such a team? What does it mean for you to work for them?
Well, I think, first of all, I think it just means a lot that chess is part of esports team. We have a few different streamers that are part of different esports teams. And I think that just a few years ago, it would have been really hard to imagine chess players or chess streamers being able to be part of such a thing, because I guess chess wasn't as much of an esport then as it is becoming now. So I think that what it truly means that we have so many chess streamers that are part of different esports teams, it's just that it's amazing that the chess can have an audience when it comes to esports as well. In my team, in Panda, there's a lot of fighting games. So a lot of people are Super Smash Bros. Competitive players, lots of different games. But I am the only one that does chess. So I think it's really amazing that a team like Panda wants to have chess in their roster, and, you know, that they feel like that complements the team. I think that's the best part. And they have supported me a lot. When I was now in New York, I was there a few weeks ago to film YouTube videos and to stream from there. They actually sent a videographer who helped me film everything. So they've been really supportive in trying to make chess as big as possible. And they're a big fan of chess, and they want chess to become even bigger. So I think it's been amazing, and I'm really, really happy with them right now.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like, as I said, it's like a completely new world opening up for chess, I guess, this whole esports. And maybe it's for sure it's a great opportunity to have new players and make chess more inclusive also to a lot of people that would have not traditionally ended up in a chess club, I guess.
Yeah, a lot of people watch different esports teams, and many people have an esports team as their favorite team, maybe because of one of their rosters or anything. So when they then see chess being part of that team, all of a sudden chess becomes a little bit more relevant for them. So there's definitely a lot of people out there that would not have discovered chess if it wasn't because of the fact that chess players have started to join these different esports teams. And I hope that in the future we see even more players joining esports teams, because then we could create things in that too. Maybe leagues, maybe there's a lot of different things that could happen. And I think it's really interesting to see what turn that could take too.
Yeah. Pia, how do you feel about Anna streaming? Like, when she started, first of all, I guess it's like quite a new world for everyone. And then I guess especially in like I don't know, I want to say like the elite chess, like people were a bit like doubtful at the beginning about these things like the PogChamps, like where lower rated players were playing. What is your opinion about all this and the streaming itself?
Yeah, no, when Anna, first of all, when Anna was commentating in Rilton Cup, I was like this, what? Are you going to commentate when you can play the tournament? And I was a little bit disappointed, actually. I was like this, but then she was commentating.
I didn't know about this either.
No, I was, are you sure you want to do this? Because that's what I said before. For me, I always been competing. I didn't know anything about anything else doing with chess. And but then I saw that Anna enjoyed it so much. It was great. And then she was commentating the World Championship match. I was also there with her to help a little bit to support. And then when she wanted to stream, it was again, oh, no, are you sure you want to do this? But it was because I didn't know anything about it. It was just, I didn't know what streaming was. So I was a little bit afraid there was something new. But now afterwards, I've seen how much she enjoys it and also how much Anna gives to chess, because there's so many people who doesn't go to clubs or whatever, but they can see her. They're maybe not so strong players, but if can see that chess is great. Chess is very much fun. So it's I think it's just the streaming with chess, the online chess is just fantastic for us, and we have to accept that this is a part of the future. And with the PogChamps, that they have players who are maybe not so strong chess players, but they're very strong in other fields. I think this is just great for chess, because they get a lot of people who doesn't know anything about chess to be interested in chess. They themselves maybe start playing more chess, and they give chess a huge audience. So no, I only see this as something very positive for chess, because I always had this love for chess, and I just want as many people as possible to have the chance to discover chess. But of course, chess is not for everyone. But like that, you can see that it's more widespread. So no, I think it's just great.
And actually, I've seen you on quite a few of Anna's streams as well. So you're, well, sometimes now a co-streamer, I guess.
Yeah, not streamer, but I'm joining her, absolutely. Yes, no, I think it's nice when we, but okay, sometimes I'm commentating, sometimes we maybe even playing or some hand and brain. So, but it's, yeah, no, it's fun. But okay, it's now and then. But of course, when Anna wants to, because Anna likes to make a lot of different things. And when she wants me to join or Juan, her father, to join, of course, we enjoy that.
Yeah, I think it's what I really enjoy on Anna's channel is actually like it's such a broad spread on like content. You know, there's like, of course, like you playing yourself, but then there's like the session with your parents, and then there's like some which are for beginners. And then there's also like, I don't know, like I feel like you're still using your platform to also bring like some, for example, analyze some of your mom's games, whether they're from the Women's World Cup or from the Battle of the Sexes. So I think it's like a great platform.
Yeah, I try to do a lot of different things, because I think that you can do a lot of different things with chess. Chess is not just playing one game. Chess can be a lot of different things, and I try to incorporate that and show that.
Love chess, love tennis. The Chess Sports Association, involved in the production of this podcast, is organizing an international chess tennis tournament from the 13th to 15th of August in Vienna, Austria. Signups are still possible, so come join us for chess, sport, and fun. The link is in the description below.
And I was wondering, you know, like with like your 200,000 followers on Twitch, that's quite a bit. But of course, that's like a worldwide spread kind of thing. Do you sometimes get recognized like on the streets in Sweden? Like, do people like kind of like sometimes know who you are?
I do, yeah. Which is really fun. I get really happy when they say that. They typically say, "Oh wait, are you the chess girl?" So I get called the chess girl. And I think it's really fun. I actually got recognized in the Los Angeles airport when I was on my way back home from the US, and I thought that was crazy because I was in this huge airport in the other side of the world for me. So yeah, it's kind of crazy when that happens. But I mean, it just makes me really happy to see that people watch chess and that people know something about chess and that they enjoy it. So it just makes me really happy.
Yeah, and I guess like it's something, as I said, like it's good because I'm not sure how often this happens to you, Pia, that you get randomly recognized at an airport. But I think sometimes the streamers just have much more exposure than anyone else.
Yeah, yeah, of course. But it happened to me at least once in Georgia. Yeah. In Georgia, they recognized me, but it was a Norwegian chess player.
There was this one guy the other day, though, Mom. Do you remember who said, "Oh, you're the chess daughter and the chess mom"?
Yeah, that is true in the shop. But I think maybe it was when he saw you, he was more sure. With me, he was more uncertain. But when you also joined me, yeah, then he
yeah, realized. He said, "This is the chess family." My dad was there too. Yeah.
So it doesn't happen, of course, as often as for Anna. Just now and then.
Yeah, and do you guys think that like Anna being like such a popular streamer will actually like maybe change something about chess, as I said, in Sweden, making it younger, making it more interesting for people again, maybe even like, I don't know, making it more open to women or making it more like inclusive, I guess?
Yes, no, I think absolutely that Anna, when she's streaming, because I guess not now, but for a long time, the picture you had of a chess player, it was an elderly man, maybe they're sitting in a cafe smoking. But of course, this has changed very, very much. But we have this problem in chess. And I think this is the biggest difference I would like to see in chess. Okay, one, of course, that have more sponsorship, but also we need to have much more women. We need to be, I mean, my dream has always been that we are about equal number in the gender, women and men. But of course, it will take time. And then to have one young girl who is dreaming and is very positive, very enthusiastic. And I think it's just really great. And I can already see it on some of the girls. Some of the girls have said, not that they will want to become professional chess players, but they want to become a streamer like Anna. So I think she is, and I also, when I speak with chess players, they can say, you know, my son or my daughter, you know, they like to go into stream and they have seen Anna streaming. And it's not only in Sweden, it's in other countries too. But I think actually, yes, that she's doing what she's doing will make a big difference. It will absolutely help. So it's but okay, we have to take a bit of time because Anna is a new phenomenon that we have because we have extremely few girls in Sweden, few women. So if it in the world the situation is bad in the Nordic country, especially in the Nordic country, the situation is normally dramatic, and I almost think that when I was young, which is quite a long time ago, that we were even more numbers of women players than we are now. And we are down to less than 3% if you look at the number of players having ELO in the Swedish rating list. And we can also see with the girls that when they come up to 14, 15, we have almost no one who are playing. We have few, but the numbers are so small. So Anna, it's very important that you are here, that we can show that we have also girls who are playing and also that you can do lots of things with chess and not only to compete.
Yeah, it's super surprising I read this before that the Nordic countries or also Sweden have such a low percentage of female players. And it was quite surprising to me, especially having had you around for so long, Pia, as a role model, I would have thought. And just because these countries are known so much for their gender equality. But yeah, somehow that doesn't lead to more chess players automatically.
Yeah, no, I think one of the problems in Sweden, which was actually good for me, we always played all together. Mm-hmm. So there, it doesn't, almost have we don't have any woman championships. We have only one girl championship a year. So the only championship the Swedish Federation is organizing for women or girls is a girl championship 1 week in a year. And when you don't have separate tournaments for women or girls, or you don't have tournaments where the number of women or girls are big compared with others, you need to be about 30%. To have to be a number when you feel comfort, you have a comfort zone. If you are less, you can feel that we are a little too less. And when you don't have that, because, and we also don't, when you have the cadet championship, the junior championship, the under, I don't know what you call, under 12 or 14, they're all together, but we never have any special prizes for the girls. And it's, I believe it's because the Nordic countries, because I think it's about the same in all the Nordic countries, we have this idea of equality, that you shouldn't need to give advantages to one sex or another. So there is a lot of resistance to have special woman tournaments, or to have what I would love to have, teamed competition where you have to have at least one man and a woman in the team. But here, these things are impossible to try to have. And I think actually for me, this it wasn't bad that I was always playing with the boys and I was used to that. And I was actually more relaxed when I play with boys, because I was so it was so unusual for me to play against girls. But maybe then I have not been the right model for others, because they saw that Pia came and she played and she got became quite a good player. We don't need to have special tournaments. But what happened when we have a system like Sweden, we can get strong female players. We have got very strong young players before, young girls players. But what happened? For some reason, one or another, they have stopped when they become 15 and 16. But they have sometimes won the boy championships or made very good results, but they have stopped, and probably they stopped because they have been so lonely among the others. But if you want to have a big, because if you want to have players, you need to have like a pyramid, you need to have a big base. Then I don't believe that this system we have in Sweden, where the clubs say, yes, you can come, but they didn't make anything active to encourage women to, or women or girls to come to the clubs. And then it's just what happened. The difference in numbers so big. You see always male players, male trainers, the way the concepts are not made for the girls. So it's not so encouraging. But now we are trying to make training for girls online, trying to make weekends where we have special women weekends. There will be a team competition for women, a team championship one weekend. So there will be some things happening, and I hope we'll make a difference. But it's true. And it's a little bit sad. I always thought it was a little bit sad. I've been around for such a long time and we haven't got more girls playing. But I think this will change. And a part of the changes will also be thanks to Anna. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that also, just to like put this in perspective, like when I've been going to chess tournaments in the past years, when I've been competing, of course, and I've gone to tournaments here in Sweden, it's really felt like it's been three or four women in these open tournaments and 150 men. Like, that is what it's felt like. I don't know if those are the exact numbers, but that is definitely what it has felt like in these tournaments.
Yeah, no, in some tournaments, there can be more numbers. It could be maybe around 10 and the players about 100. But there are some weekend tournaments. We had some months ago. There were not even one woman who was playing. And yeah, they were close to, I don't know if there were 100 or 80 players. But it's a little bit like that when you have few, it's very easy to become no one. But if you have a big number, it's so much easier to get more. And I think it's just that in Sweden, when you organize something and you have these club tournaments, you have this team competition, everyone wants to do it the way we have done before. They are very scared of changing the system. And when it has been ideas of, like, we have the Stockholm team competition, we are only playing six teams, we are playing with 14 players in the team, we just thought that it could be an idea to try to get at least to have one woman in the team. And not a woman board, but you can play with one woman. And my club, we would absolutely play with two women if I played. And if a team doesn't have a woman, we could borrow. But there is a huge, huge no from the clubs to make this kind of difference. So it's like Anna said, that we go to the tournaments and you see here, it's so much less women playing. And it was one of the first thing Anna said when we when we moved to Sweden here almost 10 years ago.
Did I say that?
Yeah, you said that you really saw the difference, that there was much less
women. When I was 11 years old then.
Mm, you were so young, but you saw it immediately. Mm.
Yeah, and I mean, like the percentage generally isn't high in most countries, so that's quite, yeah, there is still like such a difference.
Well, can I only say one thing? I forgot to say one. Can I say it?
Of course.
Yeah, no, because we in Sweden we have something which is very unique, but it's just really great. When the children go to fourth grade in lots of schools, not in whole Sweden, but all over the country in lots of schools, they are training chess and they play a competition which is called Chess 4. And in that competition, because you play whole class, and when you play, it's the team and you get a point, even if you're there, even if you lose, you get a point. And the idea is, of course, you know, the little team competition, you get together, you're training chess, you use what chess can give you, concentration and other things. And in that competition, normally, because it's from a class, we have about half girls and half boys. But the problem we have is that after this competition, which is usually only during 1 year, 99% are they stopping chess. So otherwise, we have also something else which could bring us more girls to play, more juniors, but we don't get all these players. We could get almost no one of these players to keep on playing.
Yeah, a lot of times when I talk to girls that are my age and I tell them that I play chess, their first reaction is, oh, I played in this chess tournament when I was in fourth grade, which is the tournament that my mother was talking about. And that is everything they know about chess. So, but I think it's awesome because then they know something. They feel familiar with chess in some way. They can share their own experience with chess and how they perceived it when they were that age. So I think it is a really good thing that we have that in Swedish schools.
Yeah, no, it's really very good. And it happened. Sometimes I met a photographer from newspaper, and they said, you know, I played chess when I was a kid. I played chess 4. So this tournament, even if everyone is stopping playing, they get to know about chess, and hopefully they have a positive picture of chess. And when their children perhaps got to play chess with their school, they remember that, and maybe they later on want to have to do something with chess, but they get to know chess a bit. So it's very good, this tournament, and it has been going on for a very long time now. Mm.
Yeah, I think chess in schools has a great potential, because I think there's a trend we see in a lot of countries that just the female percentage there is so much higher. And I guess one of the things we have to figure out is how to make sure, if people want to stay, of course, if people don't want to play, they don't want to play, but like to make it easy for them to stick around if they want to stick around after. One question to follow up on a bit, like, is because this podcast is part of the FIDE Year of the Woman in Chess. So basically, FIDE also decided to put this in a bit of a focus this year. And one question I would have is there are any ideas or what you would like to see from the FIDE, besides this amazing podcast, of course, to support women in chess? And I don't know whether it's tournaments or just funding or any idea, if you could dream of anything, what would it be?
Of course, there are lots of things to do. I'm very happy now when I see that when FIDE organized any kind of tournament in the open class, you had a Grand Swiss, you make it equal for the women. So when you have the word cycle, you have to make the system equal for both, in the open class and the woman class. And of course, I would really love to see more support for perhaps tournaments where we have women competing together with men, maybe to have tried, like in Gibraltar. I think Gibraltar has been amazing because they have had an open tournament now for almost 20 years, and where they have inviting women, they have had these special prizes, they have given conditions to women, and there the number of women has been so much higher in another place. And that's why the women really have loved to go and play there, because they've seen that I'm not alone. I'm there together with lots of others. And of course, Gibraltar has also been very special because they have made a lot of effort to make the tournament not only very strong, the strongest in the world or one of the strongest, but also to have all the social activities in the evening, so you get to know each other. And that's so when you play a tournament, even if you don't win a prize, you have a lots of nice memories to take with you back home. But yes, I think I would really like to see somehow encouraging other tournaments to make events where you have a lot of women's, but not only women's where you play alone, but you play together. Like this match now in Gibraltar, where we have this battle of the sexes. We had a woman team against the male team. And because I believe that it's very important for women that we have both things. We need to have special events for women, of course, because the number is very low. It's very, very important. And I think Sweden is one. Oh, you can see the evidence, what happened. If you don't have it, you don't get the women to play. But also, you really need to have to try to encourage women to see that when you play in other tournaments, you play in open tournaments and you're a big number, it's just very, very lovely too. So this is what I'm thinking of just now. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think also popularizing women's tournaments and women playing in tournaments. I know that FIDE has done that quite a lot, but continuing doing that and just broadcasting in a good way women's tournaments and doing a lot of PR, etc. And just talking about more women. I think those are really important things.
Mm. Yeah, and there's another part. I'm very happy when I see commentary from different tournaments, because if you go back, I don't know how many years, there were always male commentators, but now normally you have one woman and one man. And I think this is just so nice to have it and really to keep on with it. And of course, when it's a woman event, you must have at least one woman who is commentating. But it's not only about commentators, it's also about arbiters, organizers, that also in FIDE, in everywhere we need to have models. We need to have role models and with female players or arbiters or whatever.
Yeah,
that's really so important. And I wanted also to say that when the pandemic came and we couldn't play the Olympiad in the normal way, and when FIDE organized the Olympiad online, I was so happy to see how they put the team. There were two men players, two women players. We had a junior girl and a junior boy. And this was extremely important for a country like Sweden, where we don't have this kind of thinking in the team tournaments. And when it comes from FIDE, it likes put pressure on Sweden. And now, for example, we made a friendly match with Ukraine recently. And then Swedish Federation asked, we want also to include the women. So I think these things is very important, that we, in everything, you are including women and try to make it equal in the open class and for the women, but in exactly everything, and that we have to show women, and also, of course, when there are problems, to speak about it. This is so important. So the atmosphere in chess is in general fantastic, but we really have to take care of it. And
I agree. I also think that with commentating, like we said before, I do think it's really important to have more female commentators, but I also think that it's important to I think that it's also important to like not make women tournaments seem like different, in the sense that I think it's important to like have top commentators out there commentate both female and male tournaments, because I think that then that also brings a bigger audience to the female tournaments. So I think that that is also it's also something. I get really happy when I see top commentators that have a big following commentating both female and male tournaments, because that does bring a bigger audience to the female tournaments too. But I also really agree on having more female arbiters and just more female presence in chess tournaments. They don't have to be players, but people that work there. Because like I said, I think that that would also help if something happens in a tournament. It would help the players feel a bit safer when it comes to like talking about it, I think. I think it could create a safer environment in tournaments at least.
Absolutely.
Yeah, some really good points. And I think especially with commentating, actually, there seems to be a lot of equality and people really realize that you have to be, of course, a strong player. But it's also about like having a great personality and just liking to commentate and taking. So like, I think it was a whole new idea. Okay, well, we're pretty close to the end. There is one thing I'd actually like to try out with you, which I didn't do before, but I think it's quite interesting as there is two of you. So I'd like to trial a quick fire round kind of to finish off, which means I'll give you 10 questions and to see how similar or different you are in your chess style, but in everything. Basically, you just have to answer quickly. We can maybe start with Anna first and then Pia after. So yeah, if you're ready, then I'm going to start popping out my questions.
Okay. Yeah, I'm ready.
So first, E4 or D4?
D4. Mom.
D4. Okay. Yeah, D4.
Yeah. Then tactical or positional?
Tactical.
Positional.
Then opening or end game?
Opening.
End game.
Morning round or afternoon round?
Afternoon round.
Afternoon round.
Chess is an art, a sport, or a science?
And, well, all of them but art.
All of them but sport.
During the tournament, do you rather spend the evening preparing or relaxing?
Relaxing.
Relaxing.
What is your favorite chess player?
Kasparov?
Mine used to be my brother and the Kochnoi. And so I don't know. Maybe Juan, maybe Anna's father.
Yeah. Okay. Eighth question. What's your favorite ever tournament?
Gibraltar.
Okay. Your favorite drink during a chess game?
Water.
Green tea and water.
Mm-hmm. And if you wouldn't be playing chess, what would you do instead?
Make YouTube videos, do what I do, but without chess.
I would work with something with economics, I think, because I like so much numbers.
Well, that was very interesting. I have to say, I thought you guys be especially more similar in your chess style, but there was quite a lot of difference. Very interesting. Well, thank you very much for that. It was an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast today. And we'll be very like looking forward to seeing more of you, watching you play the Olympiad and like, yeah, just like looking into your streams.
Thank you so much. It was really fun being part of the podcast.
Yeah, it was very, very nice to be here. Thank you so much.
The FIDE Commission for Women's Chess in cooperation with Chess24 seeks your donations to help our Ukrainian chess players and their families affected by the ongoing war in Ukraine. If you want to donate, please find the link in the description below or on the FIDE webpage.
Hier kommt die Reality-Elite.
Ich suche nicht die Sendezeit sucht mich.
Beste Umgangsformen.
Du kannst dich im Pool pickeln.
Ich meine, wie crazy ist das?
Und Unterhaltung vom Feinsten.
Wir sind hier im Premium-Trash-TV.
Eine neue Folge, Kampf der Reality-Stars. Heute, 20.15 Uhr bei RTL 2. Von 0 auf 100. Aral feiert 100 Jahre mit über 100.000 Gewinnen. Zum Beispiel ein Jahr frei tanken. Jetzt ein Dankeschön, rubbellos zu jedem Einkauf. Alle Infos auf aral.de. Aral, alles super.
Ich habe mich natürlich schockverliebt, weil die war wirklich ganz, ganz klein.
So begann die Mensch-Hund-Beziehung zwischen Christina und Tierschutzhund Frieda. Und wie es danach, nach dem ersten Moment der Verliebtheit, so weiterging und welche Klippen es danach zu umschiffen galt, das hört ihr in der neuen Ausgabe von Iswas Dog, dem Podcast für harmonische Mensch-Hund-Beziehungen.
Iswas Dog mit Malte Asmus.
Überall, wo es Podcasts gibt.